The Truth Response.
Yeah, so what's up, guys? I was sick last week, so they decided to cancel.
It's because Derek's the only one who knows how to do the tech stuff.
Apparently. I am the only one that knows how to do the tech stuff. So. All right, so it's me, Derek.
He's an angry, hairy man.
I'm here. I'm back. In the room, we've got Nick.
Hey.
Say hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick. And Lizzie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we got a guest today. His name's Trey.
Hi, guys.
That rhymed.
Today, his name is Trey.
Same tomorrow.
Yeah. So, what do we want to kick off today with? Let's kick off today with the Matt Chandler stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, going there.
Going there.
So a couple weeks ago, three weeks ago?
Something like that.
Probably two or three weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Matt Chandler, pastor at...
The Village Church. Dallas-Fort Worth.
Mega church. Also well-known pastor. I mean, he's a pretty big guy.
Yeah.
He's not really that
big. He's pretty tall.
I mean, he's tall.
He's tall.
But he got called out. I'll just tell the whole story, I guess. I don't know how else to kick into it, you know. Like, so he had been messaging a lady on a social media. I don't remember which one it was. And
well, he's over 45, so it's probably Facebook.
That's true.
Or it could be MySpace.
But he is a big pastor, so he could be on other things too.
Could be.
Yeah. But so he's messaging this woman who is not his wife, on a social media. His wife was aware. Her husband was aware. There was nothing inappropriate as far as sexual or romantic or anything like that going on in the messages. And he was approached by a...
It was a friend of the woman.
It was a friend of the woman, yep. Right? And she told Matt Chandler that she felt like it was inappropriate, the frequency of the messaging, and maybe some of the coarse joking or whatever might have actually been in the messages. And so he immediately went to the elders with it, who... Then they immediately pulled a lawyer in to investigate and just see all that was going on. And turns out whatever was going on wasn't anything necessarily morally wrong,
mm-hmm.
but it did violate their social media conduct
policy.
And he himself felt convicted of it. And so he came out a couple of weeks ago and said that he was taking a sabbatical, that he wasn't stepping down as pastor, that he planned on being their pastor for, you know, the next 20 years, he said. And but he was taking a sabbatical. They didn't say a time frame, which... For those of you who don't know, a sabbatical is just a time away from doing ministry.
The everyday.
Or the everyday stuff. To kind of reflect, reconnect, get your priorities in order, get things back together.
Yeah, sabbatical is done with intention.
Right.
So there's always something behind it. There is some sort of...
It's not
redemptive, it's healing.
Right,
yeah. For a pastor... teachers take it when they want to further their education. Some pastors will take it when they want to further their education, maybe audit a class, maybe write a book, maybe pursue a doctorate, you know, do something else. Sometimes it's a spiritual retreat. So it's, I'm going to take the next 3 months, 6 months, year, whatever, and I'm going to dive into just God refilling and refreshing.
Right. So that happened. I think that with it being framed the way that I just said it, and we just discussed it, no big deal. Like, he felt personally convicted of it. there was nothing completely immoral. They did the right process. And I want to get into that a little bit here in a minute. But I want to open it up to you guys to, how do you feel about guys and girls being friends outside, like, outside of, like, marriage? And so, like, me and Lizzie are married. Me having a female friend that I talk to, or her having a male friend that she talks to in a non-romantic, non-sexual way. How do you guys feel about that?
Sounds like you're a bunch of swingers. That's all I have to say.
Upside down pineapples. That's the sign for swingers, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So don't buy anything okay. with pineapples.
I didn't know that.
You didn't? Oh, did you know that?
It's good to know.
Oh, yeah. Don't buy anything with pineapples, because it's like, yeah, okay. Like for real.
Well, there's your public don't service announcement.
Don't buy pineapples? Yep. Now pineapples are canceled?
Crap.
I'm getting caught in the rain.
I think that there's something to be said for it. It's one thing to be friendly. It's another thing to communicate the way you have to. But I know and I see from, I mean, there's massive case studies from this, right? Like, that is usually a pastor's number one moral failure, is it's usually sexually related, right?
Sure.
So I think there is something really substantial to that. And I try to take it upon myself to protect myself from those kind of things. So I communicate as infrequently as possible with women. You know, there are things that do need to be said or should be, need to be said, or just moments of encouragement that should be given. But it's usually as minimal as possible. So I think that there is something substantial to it.
I'll say you don't even text me, and I work with you.
I try not to even talk to you, and we work. In, no,
I mean, unless it's something work related, like my text conversation with you is probably the shortest ones in my phone.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean,
because you usually send it in a group message.
Yeah, and I've noticed that too, where others communicate with me that way, which I think is a great thing, and I feel a little sticky about, like, maybe copying Casey on something that I'd be communicating to a female. I don't know if that's necessary, depending upon the circumstance and how involved sure. she might be. But, yeah, I feel like there's definitely a great reason why they instituted that type of social media policy at the Village, especially in a church like that where there's a lot of attention being drawn to to Matt Chandler and to other pastors, presumably as well. But I think there is definitely something to that. Can I not be friends with a female? No. I mean, I would consider Lizzie a friend. I would consider, you know, other people that I communicate, Carla, Derek's wife. I mean, she's a friend. You know, there's other people that I would consider friends that are females. But it's not like we're going to the movies. It's not like we're hanging out. Like, it's not like
sure, when I have they a, weren't either.
Right. Like, and it's not like if I have a bad day, know. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, man, Lizzie, like, unless it's directly related to what's happening at the church. Like, I'm that's not my person that I should be going to. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, but why is that? Because it's not OK. So. For sake of, obviously, spouse, like, if mm-hmm. your spouse is one who can handle that, because not all spouses can handle the whole venting. You need to vent to sure. somebody else, right? Like,
right.
sometimes.
Right.
But, like, if not counting your spouse, like, I vent to friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of my close friends are female. Mm-hmm. It just is that way. It mm-hmm. always has been that way. So why couldn't you vent to someone like that, or having a bad day, text somebody like that? I'm not saying, like, I understand what you're mm-hmm. saying about, like, you know, trying to keep safeguards and all that.
Yeah, to me, it's operating above reproach. I mean, anything that could be taken as, oh, this individual is showing me attention, or you know, maybe they feel like men and women do not communicate the same way. Like, we know waffles and spaghetti, right? Like, sure. There is, like...
There is some crossover, though.
There is some crossover. There is some crossover, I get that.
And some people function a little bit more you're one side than the other.
You're very feminine,
right?
Male. So that's why it makes...
Right? No, but it's true. It is true. I'm not masculine in the typical sense of masculine, right? Like, I'm not. And I totally embrace it.
Large and hairy.
I don't care. I am. And yeah. Totally doing the wilderness thing, you know. Define reproach for us, because there's probably a lot of people listening that may not have a clue.
Yeah, so to look at reproach, it would be the opportunity for somebody to say, oh, there's something questionable that could be going on here. So examples are probably the best way to look at it. So the Billy Graham rule, which is something that some people know in large part because of our former vice president, Mike Pence. So he operated by the Billy Graham rule. Media had a heyday with that when he said, I'm not going to go eat dinner with a woman alone that's not my wife. So everybody thought, whatever, like, he's evil and wicked and he can't control himself. And it's like, no, that's not it. I don't want anybody to ever have the wrong idea. And that is that line of reproach.
So reproach is not necessarily that you have done something in your past that has can cause it. It's simply the question thereof.
Right.
Well, how do we actually operate like that? Because just about anything could be called into question.
Anything could be, but if you can cover your bases on the big ticket items, like, we do staff lunch here every Friday. Right. That's just one of the things that we've done. We did it starting at COVID time so we could help support some of our local restaurants and places that weren't getting a lot of business. And we just have done that ever since. If it's a day when no one else can go and it's just Lizzie and I, we don't go. It's presumably the wrong thing. Right. I mean, we are in the office together alone, but there are cameras. Right. But
there's not cameras in the office.
There's not cameras in the office. I know.
Yet.
Right. There will be. And we're doing that. We're above reproach. Right. So it.
But the question still stands of does it make it wrong to do that? Here's a better question.
Does it make it wrong?
Is it wrong across the board? Okay. Is it wrong across the board? Or is it case by case? Like, is every person different? Would I be different than you to be looked at in those regards?
I don't think so. Because you are an elder at this church, I would say in your best interest, it would not be in your best interest to go out and eat dinner with a female friend that you have alone. Just because you're visible, we're visible, and if other people are like, oh, what's happening there? And you could have all of the defense in the world behind all of that. But if there is ever anything that can be misconstrued that way, number one, it will be, right?
Right, and let's back it up a little bit, because, I mean, that's an obvious...
Put the dump truck in reverse.
That feels like an obvious... you shouldn't do that, right? Like, that feels a little bit on the more obvious side. Mm-hmm. Like, let's back it up to what Matt Chandler was doing.
Right.
Right? Just messaging.
Right.
Everybody's in the know.
Right.
Everything's transparent.
Yep.
Is that wrong?
Yeah. I mean, I think in the case of Matt Chandler, if there wasn't a social media policy that outlined what that communication was supposed to look like, then I don't think there's anything overtly wrong with it. Obviously, if there is someone in the congregation, somebody that they trust too, that is like, this just doesn't look good, this feels icky, there's something to be said for that. There's something that needs to be addressed. Sure. And it would depend on, it did mention that there was coarse joking. It depends on what that looks like.
Right,
yeah. Yeah. That is another thing that could be that could be taken in a bunch of different directions.
Right, right.
So in Matt Chandler's case, his wife was aware.
Her husband was aware.
Yeah, for the woman he's communicating with, her husband was aware. I'm presuming they had access potentially to their accounts to be able to see those kind of things.
And as they, didn't see anything wrong with it. Right.
Right. Right. So in that case, is that wrong? I don't think so. I mean, I think there's something there that's fine.
Doesn't it matter like how we look at it too? Matt Chandler is not just Matt Chandler, right? Mm. Like personally, as Matt Chandler, sure, yeah, maybe it's not wrong if Matt Chandler wasn't the pastor of a huge church in Dallas, Texas, and it also maybe wouldn't be necessarily wrong if Matt Chandler wasn't married or. You know, there's all these things that we have to look at. So, like,
but I think that that part, that the married part, is part of what I'm getting at too, though. Mm-hmm. Is like that, like, is that wrong? I mean, we got to translate some of this stuff. I mean, it's a big enough story. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's important for us to translate some of this to the average Christian listener, right? Mm-hmm. Like that. Okay, yeah, he was a pastor. I get that. There was a policy. I think that's the most important part, that in all of the, because it wasn't, everything was stated that nothing was necessarily wrong that was said, so, except for maybe the coarse joking, but we don't understand what that actually means. So
he effectively, we got to look at where the, like, where the corrective action even came from, and then you can start to see where the, who the sin was against. So in this case, it came from the church. So the sin was against the church itself, and that he didn't put himself above reproach. So they felt it necessary to give a corrective action. I wouldn't say punishment, but they felt it was necessary for him to take some time off.
Yeah, so, and in that, it's what I come back to and what we've discussed offline is that it was a disregard for their social media policy. They had a written policy that said...
Right.
Here's how you can, how you can't, what you should, what you shouldn't do. And so he broke the rule. And as the pastor, you break the rule, you got to do the time. And probably more time than if it was an associate pastor or a children's director or somebody not as visible.
It probably would have been different if an elder had said, hey, probably shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
It probably would have been different than a congregation member being like, hey, what do you think about this? And I do want to state that applause all around for the way they handled
it. Sure. Awesome.
Amazing.
Yep.
Perfect example of how the church should handle any kind of discrepancy. You go to the person.
He could have tried to hide it and
could have been
it under the rug and stuff, and then but he took it.
And,
well,
and
the
leadership,
lady could have
their leadership could have
gossiped
the
I mean, he could have just swept it under the rug. The leadership could have swept it under the rug. I mean, there is a bunch of different layers in that they just did it really, really well with all of it.
Yeah, and especially in light of the things that has come out with the SBC, the Southern Baptist Convention, things like Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, you know, and several other instances. Like, you find where their lead guys were untouchable.
Yeah.
And so, these guys were guys that were having affairs. These guys were guys that were molesting and raping children. Like, these guys are guys that were just, pushed to the side because they were pastors at XYZ Church.
Right.
Because they had influence, because their community respected them. And so that leadership drew a circle around them and said, out of bounds. It doesn't matter what you do, for the most part, like, they're out of bounds. We're not going to bring any charges against them. We're going to keep everything hush-hush and quiet. That way, it doesn't affect our church negatively. And that is wrong. So we look at the other extreme where we don't see any, like, overtly negative issues here. And, like, man, like, this is going to be a big deal?
Right, but
we've also
talked about the difference between, you know, personal conviction and sin, you know, across the board. And I feel like in this case of what's going on with Matt Chandler, that this is a personal church conviction, right? Like, this was rules that were stated by the church.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Chandler had a conviction that he had caused sin, whether that was breaking rules, whatever it was, right? Because none of that was detailed, right? So whatever it was, there was some personal conviction attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, what? how far do you take this? Because we don't want to be pharisaical at the same time. Like,
sure.
We don't want to create all these different rules that you have to follow, or else it's whatever. You know. So how do we approach this? And before I let you guys answer any more, I actually want to hear from the only woman in the room how she feels about all this, because it's a different perspective. Men and women are different. Like, we think differently, we talk differently, we approach things differently. Like, what are your feelings about all of this?
In which part of it? I mean,
where's the line? Like, do you see problems with it? Do you not see problems with it? Like,
I mean, Trey's wife, Brittany, is my best friend. And I text her, call her, talk to her all the time. And my husband usually yells over the phone, leave my wife alone.
Right, but that is female to female, yes, right?
But, like, I'm friends with Trey. I would consider myself friends with him, but I don't text him. I don't know that I even have his phone number. So most of the time, I don't have the male's phone number until after I'm friends with the wife. And then I let the wife know, like, I'm texting them about these things. Like, just because that's the way that I was raised, I guess.
See, so, I've never done, like,
because you've asked me before if I've had some people's phone number, and I said no, why would I have their phone number? And you're like, because they go to the church. And I'm like, it's a guy. Like, it's not like, I mean, I can look it up for you. Like,
I was gonna say, you also had access.
Yeah,
you have access to all the phone numbers.
Yeah, I do have so access to phone, that's, but that doesn't necessarily
more of the reason why I'm asking if you had it. But
I mean, unless they're like involved in my ministry, whether they have students in my ministry or kids in my ministry or they're a volunteer, I don't have a lot of people's phone numbers.
Let's give you this question, like, phone number side. Yeah. How do you feel about Derek having friends that are female and interacting with them and communicating with them and talking to them, presumably like he might talk to me or to Will or to Trey or...
You had to throw Will in there. That's why she lost it.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if I was to ask him to see his phone to see his conversations, and if he was trying to hide something with me, I would have a problem. But sure.
I've always felt like that's where the line of reproach is,
but
right?
He,
like, what's my history say? Like, that's where I've always thought
I know
of it.
That he,
and I could, I mean... I'm
like, when we first
everybody's history wrong, right? Squeaky clean until
when,
it isn't.
Yeah. Well,
sure,
when we first got
but my, that's all you can judge up. Somebody based on, right? Like,
shut your mouth. You ask me what my opinion is, and then you're not listening.
Yeah, well, I'm a man.
So when we first got married, he was going to go see a female friend of his who was having a hard time, and they were going to go out somewhere in public, and mm-hmm. he told me where they were going and stuff like. And I didn't have a problem with that.
I don't
think
we ended up going, though, did we?
I think you, I don't remember if you did or not, but it was like all of it was like, okay, the I'm going out into a public place to talk with her. Like, that's where we're going to go. Like, that's where I'm going to be and stuff like that. We're going to meet there. We're not, you know, obviously we're not going to drive together or anything like that. And, you know, while I'm there, I'll tell you when I get there and I'll tell you when I'm leaving and all of that stuff. So that's not been really an issue. But, I mean, he also doesn't ask me, like, who are you messaging? And I'm like, it's usually just my girlfriends, but whatever. But, I mean, it's not, I don't know that it's something that we've really thought about a lot in our marriage and stuff like that, or spent a lot of time.
I don't think so. I mean, because I've always, like I said, I come at it from the approach of, like, I've always had a lot more female friends than I've had guy friends until now, actually, because I'm thinking about it right now.
I'm trying to think of female friends that I text
on a regular basis. And
I had a lot more guy friends growing
up. I honestly
up than female
can't
friends.
Think of a whole lot of them that I do that with now. Mm-hmm. But, like, I have in the past, though. Like, I have
JoJo and Steffi.
And, well, but even Michelle.
Mm-hmm, Michelle.
I mean, which was the pastor's wife before now. I mean, we all lived together, so that was part of it. She was my best friend for a good chunk of time. I didn't have any friends here, really. Sure, my fault, whatever you want to say, but, like, she was the one who understood ministry and all the struggles I was going through, mm-hmm. you know? And most of the time, I mean, Lizzie was around, but it was one of those things that it was just, we did life mm-hmm. together. It wasn't mm-hmm. Something we thought about, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've always come at it from that approach of, like, you're right. Everybody's squeaky clean until they're not. Mm-hmm. But I was also raised with the mentality of you hold on to your integrity, mm-hmm. because you have integrity until you lose your integrity.
Right.
So like, and so you should judge me based on the integrity of my past.
Sure.
Not on the integrity of my possible future. So, yeah, and that's, I guess that's how I've always approached the idea of reproach. I haven't ever really thought of it in, I guess, I don't know if that's the technical definition of just so that nobody can even think something sideways of you possibly. Like, I've never really looked at it in that light because of the approach that I've always taken is like, my past is checkered in some areas, but not in the one we're talking about, you know, so... Yeah.
I mean, to me, when you're visible, perception to a lot of people is reality. And whatever they see is exactly what they think. And and even if it's completely misinterpreted, if they see something that they misinterpret, it only takes 15 minutes for them to communicate it. I mean, now especially to whole world, right? Yeah. So all of a sudden you go from squeaky clean reputation to needing to actually thoroughly communicate like what it was that happened and why it was it appears this way and what it is that looks like.
So where is the practical line? Because if we as Christians take that, it's easy for us to be like, oh, now we have to hide under a bush the entire time. Like, everything we do has got to be hidden.
I mean, I don't think that's the case at all. I think the more open and the more... No,
but I'm saying we could get to that point. Like, what is the practical line that we can draw? Like, is it okay for me to go out to Chili's and have a beer? Mm-hmm. Because somebody might see me that has a drinking problem.
Right.
Like, if my character's not being called into question, if I've had one beer, am I no longer above reproach because I had one beer in a public eye? I mean, what line do we draw?
Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
one, I think, how do we do that practically? As a church is drawing those lines. We haven't. I mean, I believe at a point in time there were those lines that existed. When I went to Johnson, I don't know if when you guys went to Bible college, you signed a covenant that said, this is how you're going to act, this is how you're going to respond, these are things you're going to do.
Yep.
Trey, you just had to do that with Johnson, even though you're an online student, right? And, you know, we kind of laughed it off with some of my friends, too, where it's like...
No rated R movies?
Yeah, I don't know if that...
That was one of our.
Right.
Wow!
I didn't read the Johnson one.
I was saying we watched rated R movies in our lounge, but
you know,
I think
some of that. Yeah, but you can't drink. Like,
we couldn't drink. See, here was ours though. Ours was we weren't allowed to drink on campus, and if we were of age, we could drink off of campus as long as our character didn't get called into question.
See, Johnson's was different. So, Johnson's, at least the time that I was there, was you will not drink. Yep. You will abstain the entire way. And I mean, I had a good buddy.
I mean,
does that
count at home whenever you're on break?
Didn't matter.
The whole time?
Yep. Whole time.
Yeah. And that's so the movie thing. Was,
that was the covenant.
The movie
that you
thing
signed.
Was.
To me, that's.
For the four years that I was in college, we weren't supposed to be
rated R movies. Wild. Because that's. I think. It, for the case of drinking, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I understand what you're trying to get at. Jesus created wine in the part of the wedding festivities where everyone was already drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's a line in which we are going to be willing to draw now, you must say Jesus crossed it.
He crossed a lot of lines for his time.
Yes, but this is the one that we're talking about, like, sin safeguards. Like, we're talking about causing a brother to stumble in sin.
Yeah.
Like, this is that's a pretty hefty line because it's the first and one of the most important things we pull of Jesus's miracles, right?
Yeah, first miracle.
So like, but
you're also implying that that everybody was drunk and couldn't control their actions at that point.
I am very much implying that was the normal case for a Jewish festival at the point where the way that it was presented in scripture.
The alcoholic content of wine
that's complete BS.
Was
that is not
also
true.
Different. The fermentation process was
that
far
was
different.
That's not true.
Okay.
You can look at history, it's not true. Fermentation has changed and has gotten more specific so that flavoring and alcohol content was more is more regulatable. Mm-hmm. But it didn't mean that wine wasn't alcoholic then.
No, and it
didn't. And they specifically talked about the fact that once everyone's drunk, they normally bring out the bad wine.
Right.
So that people don't know the difference.
Maybe it was
that
just
was
grape juice.
All drawn.
It could have been just grape juice. The best grape juice they've
ever But that's not what they said, right? They were like, what is this? He brought out the good wine now.
Yeah.
You know, second. Like, it was.
I think Jesus made sparkling grape juice. And it was the best
and
thing
was
ever.
It was so great. Yeah,
it was the best thing ever.
Everybody was already plastered and they didn't have
know.
To get any more.
It
right?
just tasted really good.
No.
That's what I think.
I think it's all crazy.
Well, I mean, I get where you're coming from, and we can do ands and buts the whole way through, and I get that's what you're doing a little bit of, and we need to do
a
that.
Little bit, but I think that there's a practical line. We have to figure out where that practical line is because for every person,
it's going to be different, and for each church, it's going to be different too. Mm-hmm. Specifically, I mean, you're probably going to be looser from a church leadership standpoint than you would be from an individual standpoint, maybe. But I think it's not just looking at your track record. I think it's looking at the track record of others. I think it's looking at the public perception of people in those roles of authority. I mean, this is not a great time. The public perception of pastors and priests and clergy and elders is at all-time lows at this point.
Sure.
Just because of what we have done to that. And how we've abused it and manipulated it and drug that through the mud. So for me, I've made that stand of maybe on a very rare occasion would I drink a glass of wine or have a beer or something like that.
Sure.
It would have to be a very, very specific type of...
extraordinarily occasionally.
Yes, extraordinarily right, like, occasionally.
Right.
And then I think from the other side of that, like in my life before this, I was still a Christian, right? But my job put me in a place, in a position where I supported several female sales reps. And I had to spend time in the car with them driving to and from appointments. And sometimes our whole day of... going out and appointment after appointment after appointment meant we were going to eat lunch together because that's what we did. And so
with that real quick,
right.
I guess what the point, the line that I'm asking us to elaborate on mm-hmm. is in a situation like that, do we leave it to personal conviction? Obviously, and a spouse's personal conviction on things as well, because you are one, right? But do you leave that to personal conviction, or is there a hard line about it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, as Christians, we're called to—we're called out. We're set mm-hmm. apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some things, there are lines drawn. Mm-hmm. How hard a line do we draw on something like that? Personal conviction, or do you just say no across the board?
There's a most right answer.
Mostly, so,
yeah. Yeah, it's like a mostly right answer.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
It's like there's one answer that is better than all the other answers, and that's the answer you should take.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you have to take that option. It's just you got to recognize the pitfalls of the other options, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as you take risk in putting yourself in this situation where temptation can come, and you know, I don't know. I just, for me personally, that's just asking for trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go ahead and go with the very firm line where I talk to my wife.
But that's I already stated that as a personal conviction. But do you draw that line for other people? That's the question.
Yeah.
So do we draw that line as Christians for others? Do we say, hey, you shouldn't do that, or? Is it something that comes down to, hey, you should really think about it?
I mean, there are those lines in the requirements of leadership in the church. I mean, there are those lines that are very clear. Like,
okay, but most of the people listening
yeah.
right now aren't leadership,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I get
yeah.
that. Like, there's specific guidelines to all of leadership positions.
Yeah.
to some degree, whether made by the church or whether it is made in scripture. But I mean, like, just the average, everyday Christian. You're, because that's who
and,
we're talking to.
What, right. what it feels like you're arguing, then, is that, yes, it is a conviction-driven... It's conviction-driven is where it's going to come from. And you... If you are operating in a place or in a way where you feel that if somebody sees you in this doing this thing, in this place, with this person, communicating this way, if it's not something that could be viewed by the public and you're willingly allowing and desire, it's okay if my wife walks in or my, you know, my spouse walks in or my best friend walks in or somebody that I only have a relationship because I see them every Sunday at church. Like, if you are okay with them seeing you in that situation without shame, then I think you're okay. Then I say you're okay. Mm-hmm. If it's something where you're like, oh man, like, I really don't want them seeing me in the car with somebody of the opposite sex or at dinner with somebody of the opposite sex because they might say or do or whatever, there could be a compromising situation that it reveals itself, then in that case, then I better not do it, right?
Yeah.
So
that is very much the line that I was trying to get to, is what's a simple way of putting that into words.
But what he's talking about, though, is whether what you're doing, whether it's like you're talking about that personal conviction, and I understand that, but at the same time, like, you know, we have a responsibility to tell people, like, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm not saying, well, I'm not saying tell people, like,
But just because I have a personal conviction doesn't mean that you're going to have the same personal conviction.
Well, you know.
And I would still say.
I mean, it's a personal conviction, that's so subjective.
Yeah.
And it depends on where they are in their faith as well.
I also think it depends on who they're around during whatever it is. Because, like, for instance, I know someone who is a recovering alcoholic, hasn't had a drink for a long time. Their spouse, she'll have a glass of wine around him. He doesn't have any issues. He doesn't get tripped up. She doesn't have any issues. She doesn't get tripped up. They're both okay with it. Does that mean she should never drink wine around him, even though that neither one of them have an issue? No,
but
right. So
yeah,
like,
I mean,
that's an in-home kind of a
and that needs situation. To be figured out. Where Trey's at is the same way I am. If you're like, oh man, like Lizzie's out of town and my friend Janet invited me to go out. You know, we're gonna go out and grab dinner together. I'd probably be like, is that really a good idea?
Right.
Like,
well, right.
I mean, I would say that same thing. Like, if any man in our men's group was like in that situation, I'd be like, I don't know if that's a really good idea. Mm-hmm. Because sure. Again, you're squeaky clean until you aren't. And the line between that is so fine. It only takes one moment, and you don't always know exactly. Yeah, there you go. It's a clip. You don't always know exactly how that other person feels about you. Even if you don't feel that way about them.
It's true.
And it takes, I mean, how many movies are built on that premise of, you know, they captured the photo at just the right time when that person kissed that person. And even though that person pushed the other person away, now that person is in a bunch of trouble. And like, how many movies are built on that premise? Like,
sure.
There you go. Like, it, absolutely.
Right. And the only reason, I know you guys probably feel like this is getting ridiculous, but.
But you're a ridiculous guy. We expect it.
I know, right? And some of it I'm playing into very much. But I think it's important because of the fact that Matt Chandler was just messaging somebody of the opposite gender, and everyone was in the know that we would normally feel is an important person to be in the know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think it's an important thing to, like, dig into. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said about, you know, would you be completely unashamed of anybody and everybody being able to see whatever it is that you're doing, discussing, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's, I think it's a great way to draw a line or not. Like, mm-hmm. you know, well, the,
doesn't make you right.
Well, scripture also says everything is permissible and everything is lawful.
But it's not all beneficial.
But it's not all beneficial, right?
What I'm saying is Matt, that's exactly where Matt Chandler was at, is he thought what he was doing. He said he willingly gave his phone. He willingly, like, he was like, oh, well, if you think there's a problem, here, look. And they determined. So he thought that he was above board. And then
sure.
through the investigation and everything and,
right.
and prayer and reflection and everything. With you know,
and policies.
All kinds of stuff. And but he came to the conclusion then, and he sees it rightly.
Right.
Which is that he was, you know, I think that.
But my point is that if we don't. If we don't have this conversation, we either dismiss it, right, on one hand, and just say, ah, it's all fine. Everything is good. You know, you just have your friendships and whatever. Or we end up going down this legalistic route where mm-hmm. you're like, you can't have a female friend talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a female friend, period. You can't talk to somebody of the opposite gender. Like, what? We get into these things where we want to have... Look at the whole Old Testament and a lot of the New mm-hmm. Testament. It's all based on that. Mm-hmm. Like, all of the extra rules that all of the Jewish people, it was all based around trying to safeguard everything.
Mm-hmm.
So these conversations are important.
Yeah, and you're right, but and I don't think anyone at this table is looking at it from a legalistic standpoint.
Sure.
We're looking at it as a, here's a best practice.
And I'm not saying that you guys are. I'm saying mm-hmm. that those listening...
It can get to that point.
Those listening, we don't want them to
right.
land on either side of that. We right. want them in that middle mm-hmm. section where it's like, okay, I need to put up the right safeguards,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time... And my right safeguards are going to look a little bit different than your right safeguards.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also based on interactions with spouses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interactions with parents, mm-hmm. if you're don't have mm-hmm. a spouse. Interactions with pastors, maybe. Maybe you'd go talk to your pastor about it, or mm-hmm. or an elder, or leadership, and say, "Hey, look, this is what I'm dealing. I'm just curious what the right things to do is." Those conversations need to happen, mm-hmm. right? Like, if anything is even kind of questionable, have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and if we are allowed to have doubts like... about whether God exists at times or whatnot, as Christians. There's doubt. Not I don't struggle with that, but people do. And if that's allowed, then conversations can happen even about this sort of thing.
I think,
you know,
for me, like, my parents did a really good job of, like, modeling this, because
mm-hmm.
When my parents got married, they both were really involved with their churches and stuff like that, and having kids and students over all the time to their houses. And I mean, me and my brother were in college, and they said, we will not have alcohol in our house.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, they were just like, we have kids over all the time. We don't want them to have access to it. We don't want, you know, them to think that because we're doing it, we think it's okay for them to do it, whatever. That mm-hmm. was their personal choice. They didn't look down on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't tell anybody like, oh, look how great we are for doing this or whatever. And they didn't force that on me and my brother. Like, I mean, when we lived with them, yes, mm-hmm. of course, we had to live by the rules. But like, even if we were adults going back, they wouldn't want us to bring alcohol. They would mm-hmm. tell us not to bring alcohol in the house. And I mean, because that was their choice. That's mm-hmm. what they've decided to do. But I don't see anything wrong without having alcohol in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very clear on, like, this is our personal choice to do this because we don't, these are the reasons why. And they would, you know, they explained all the reasons why, and it makes sense. But that doesn't mean everybody's going to do the same thing, and that's mm-hmm. okay.
Right.
And that's just the way that they decided to do it. And, like, so, like, I mean, we don't have... like hardly any alcohol in our house, but we do have alcohol in our house, and it's not a big deal, but it's very, like, from where my parents' standpoint, like, it is a different extreme from what they were mm-hmm. and how they did, but it wasn't like, I don't know, it wasn't like, this is the way you have to do things and this is why and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It was more like, these are the decisions we've made for our household and our family mm-hmm. and here are the reasons why, and whether you do or not, it does, that's you know, that's really your up to you and between you and God.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super good. I think that, I don't know, I just, that was something that was a big thing that came out recently, was well done, well handled. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important not to just disregard all of those things. Mm-hmm. I also think it's important not to get too legalistic in some of those things, but to always have the conversation. If, yep. if you have any question about any of it, be absolutely willing to have the conversation with people, because if you're seeking truth, you will find truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is the topic for Sunday's message?
Topic is, is there an enemy?
Yes. Is there an enemy?
I'm not preaching, so.
Oh, nice. How do you get away with that one?
Well, today is my anniversary.
Congrats.
Casey and I have been married for 15 years today.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's Wednesday night, and we have to be here. So we're going out to dinner on Friday, and then Saturday or nice. Sunday is Casey's birthday. So I was like, well, I'd like to have time with one another. Not that we do, but we're gonna go, we're at least going to go out to dinner and something on Friday night. So, yeah. Cool. So Jesse's coming. He's preaching.
Nice.
And it's good because I feel like I've talked about the enemy a lot recently.
Yeah, you have.
So
yeah,
it's good to get somebody else's perspective on it and some other. I mean, when he says things that I say too, it helps reinforce the message that much more. But the enemy.
Yeah. It's not flesh and blood.
No.
No. He's been all over the place though recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and if, according to John, there are many antichrists that exist, so.
Yep.
The singular Satan, and then the antichrists.
Oh, not to mention all of the demons that are talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely not you and I.
Nope.
Right? We are not the enemy of each other. We're just being caught up in this big mess. I think about our country right now and how divided it's been and how we've been made to think that, you know, like you're the enemy because of X, Y, or Z, whether it's, you know, you're red, I'm blue, or, you know, you're black, I'm white, or, oh, there's a lot of colors mixed in all this in there.
Yeah.
But
it's tribal.
It's very, very, but just because you're in that category, you all of a sudden are my enemy. And it's become very divisive in our country. It's been ripping us apart when that's not at all the truth, even. Like, just because you have your personal views and I have my personal views doesn't mean we have to even dislike each other. I mean, there's plenty of friends that I have that we don't agree on most everything.
Yep.
But we still like each other. We still to hang out with each other on occasion, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important. I mean, I know we don't have a whole lot of time. We mm-hmm. spent a lot of time on what I feel is a great topic. Mm-hmm. But in hindsight of this Sunday, which is now last Sunday, a couple days ago, we talking about the enemy, it's important to point out that it's not us. It's not humans. Right. Humans are not the enemy of one another. It's we can be the enemies of ourselves.
Yep.
Absolutely. Which is our own evil desires, which is still not flesh and blood. But it's the metaphorical flesh,
mm-hmm.
right? But our hearts are wicked, and we are enticed by the things that the spiritual influencers are ripping us around with, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I was listening to a podcast. Probably what day is today? Wednesday? Maybe it was either late last week or early this week. And it's a pretty well known Christian podcast. A lot mm-hmm. of people listen to it. And I have found that they're, as much as they try to say that they're the welcoming and inclusive, not maybe not uber progressive, but there's some progressive roots to the things that they say and the way that they talk. Man, I was, it just made me cringe listening to this. Like, the host of this particular podcast, with this episode, was just, they were interviewing somebody talking about the church in America, and he kept reiterating and talking about white evangelicals, as in forming this group that if you are white and you go to church, an evangelical church, then you are automatically in this group. Mm. And everything that he talked about was negative in terms of that group. And it made me think about that presentation given in scripture where it's, if you say to if the eye says to the ear, because you're not an ear, you have no place in the body. Like, it made me feel that way. Like, yeah, okay, there are churches that are predominantly white, typically because they are in predominantly white areas. There are churches, I was offered a position at a church that was in a very mixed city, and there were white churches and black churches. And I was like, why aren't there just churches? And they're like, well, it's been that way for the last 150 years. And either you go to the white church or you go to the black church. And if you're white, you go to this church. And if you're black, you go to this church. And I was like, well, have you ever tried, like, to tear down those walls? And they said, yeah, you know, we've tried to do mixed things, and yeah, the white people show up here and the black people show up here. And I'm like, man, that's sad, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people who are standing on their soapbox of saying inclusivity and we're open and we're welcoming and gospel, you know, in its purest form, are also the same people who are drawing circles and saying, you belong to this group, you belong to that group, this group is better than that group. And just because this group has perceived influence, which I don't even know how influential the white evangelical church really is in our country anymore. There are a bunch of people who say they're Christians that definitely don't spend any time in scripture and spend very little time in church. Like, and so they give a lot of people, a lot of the church, a bad name. But man, I don't know, the enemy and divisiveness and division, and it just was one of those things that sat so poorly. I like to read things from the other side. Like, mm-hmm. I don't mm-hmm. mean like necessarily, like, I mean, I'll read atheist stuff. Like, I'll read progressive Christianity stuff. I'll read it because I want to know what they're thinking. Like,
right.
And what drove you to come to this conclusion? Because I don't know, I feel like I'm a pretty foundational, fundamental Bible-y guy. Like, I didn't grow up in the church, and so everything, I didn't get my tradition from a tradition. Like,
right, it wasn't from your parents.
It wasn't from
my
parents.
It's not your parents' faith.
Right. It was everything that was like, well, I'm going to read this Bible, and I want it to tell me what I'm supposed to think and act and do, and how it's, what does Jesus look like, and all right, he's my model.
Right.
And man, it just, I don't know. I feel like I'm wrong so many times, and in the grand scheme of things, I am, like we all are, because we can't ever all get the whole picture. Right. But it's like, there's this other side that's like telling me overtly, everything you think and know and are is wrong. And I'm like, it can't be. It can't be like that, because we're in a church right now that is a multicultural, multinational church that the other week I put it, there are five different native languages that exist with the people that live here, which is awesome. Right. In a church of 200 people. Like, right. It's crazy to think about that. And we've got Spanish-speaking people and black and white, and we don't have any Asian people. We need some Asian people. I guess Lizzie's kind of Asian.
Don't say that.
You want to be. So it's just like, I don't, I, I don't get what so many people are saying because I don't see it in our context. And then I also feel like what they're saying about me is I'm doing wrong and bad, but then I see in our context that there's good and redemption and unity, and the racial stuff is just, I just don't feel it here.
It's interesting you say that, because I actually had that conversation today with one of our homeless guys that I was like, you know, because I got one homeless guy who's super racist, right? Mm. But he's like the only one I really know who's like out there, like just has no problem being racist, right? And I was talking to another one of our homeless guys, because I confronted him on it because he said it right in front of me, and the other homeless guy was there. And after the racist homeless guy walked away, I was talking to my favorite homeless guy. and anyways, we were talking, and I was just like, I don't see it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm around a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I'm around a lot of people of a lot of different ethnicities. Mm-hmm. Because I don't believe in the whole different races thing. I believe we are one human race.
Sure. We're one race, different. Yeah.
Maybe that's the nerd in me, but whatever.
No, that's true.
So, but different skin colors, different ethnicities. Like, I'm around a lot of those people, and I just don't see the racism. Mm-hmm. And if I do see any of the racism, it's within their own, like, their it's own racism group, yeah. against their own group.
Yeah.
Like, they talk bad about themselves.
Yeah.
As far as ethnicity or skin color goes. And it's like, I don't.
It's happening now. I mean, it's really the only people talking a whole bunch of smack about white people is white liberals. So.
Well, there is a lot of that. For the most you're right. Part, no, you're right.
It is. Yeah.
But he was saying, he feels like it's the opposite. He says he sees it all the time. And I just, I mean, I know we have different contexts to some degree, mm-hmm. but like, I don't know. It was just interesting. I had the same conversation. Like, mm-hmm. I don't see the divisiveness. Well,
and
you know?
The sad
like,
part is somebody on the other side is going to say it's because of our white privilege, right? Like, that's going to be their response, is it's because you're white, and it's because you have this ingrained privilege that I'm waiting for my white privilege check. Like, I don't know. I never experienced that in my life. Like, and it's because I grew up in a community with a bunch of white people. Like, so I was the... Like, I was a part of that group that people didn't like, I guess. I don't know. Like, I had to work for everything I had. Nothing was given to me.
It was more like fighting for everything I had.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like exactly. And in fact, I love to use this example. Because I lived in a predominantly white area and grew up in a predominantly white area that was a predominantly poor area, too. Like, we're talking coal country in northeast Pennsylvania. Mm. So, like... I was told by hiring managers that they wouldn't hire me because I'm a white male. They said, if you were a female, I'd hire you. If you were any other ethnicity other than white, I'd hire you for this position. But because our diversity quota has not been met, I can't hire you. I was like, so you're telling me I'm the most qualified person for this. But because my skin color and my gender or my sex doesn't align, you won't hire me. Yep, telling you that.
Lawsuit.
Yeah, and like, it should be, right?
Right.
But who would hear that?
And see, that's...
So
that's,
it's so crazy to me, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how you create those teams, those divides, right? Mm-hmm. The red and blue, the black and white, or the colored and not colored, whatever, melanin deficient, so to speak. But, you know, there's this narrative, this lie that, you know, like, oh, well, they've got it so good. Look, that's why all of these people are in these power structures. And no, it's just all those people are the same people that have been in those power structures for the last 100 years is,
and
things changed.
And what politics is 100% of the way is creating problems to create solutions for those problems, exactly. Right? Creating problems that don't exist to create solutions for problems that don't exist.
In their one world government and,
Well, that's one step farther, but
well, that's what we're leading to. I mean,
well, I mean, there's been conversations. There have been open conversations at this point about that stuff, which is interesting. And you can go do the research yourself. I mean, you can find it on the internet. You can find anything on the internet. But we have a common enemy because there's only one, right?
Right. And it's not people.
And it's not people.
Right.
And we have to start remembering to look at people that way.
Right.
That it doesn't matter how much you disagree or you think the other person is wrong or you think the other person is stupid. They're not the enemy, period.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the person you're fighting against. They're not the thing you are fighting against. They are not the reason why you aren't where you want to be or you're not where you think you should be or whatever that might be. There is a common enemy, and it's not flesh and blood.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to start looking at solutions to our problems and the combat tactics to our enemy in such a light that it's not the person. Circumstance.
Yep.
Fatherless homes.
Yep.
That is an enemy structured thing.
Yep.
It's not a person structured thing.
Yep.
That is a solution that isn't, oh, this person did something wrong. Mm-hmm. That's a solution that's based in, okay, how do we get fathers in homes and to stay that way? You know, like that's just an example. But I do find it funny that, I mean, especially even you, like you have a split, you know, your parents got divorced and so I don't know how your parents were or whatever. I don't know all that, but
they,
like,
hated each other.
Well, but for you, like how much were you, was your dad there for you or your mom?
My dad was a truck driver.
Oh, there you go.
So and my mom worked retail.
So even if your parents hadn't divorced, your dad wasn't physically present all the time anyways.
Right.
So, like, the odds were stacked against you as much as they are stacked against anyone else whose parents wouldn't be in their lives.
I guess the only difference is my dad was there when he could be, you know?
I'm just saying, situation.
And I'm just saying, from the same standpoint, there are a lot of dads who just say, oh, I'm having a kid, I'm out. And they leave.
Oh, true, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
I'm saying my dad was there when he could be, right?
Right.
So I don't have that room to necessarily say, I know what that's like. Like, there are dads that just checked out.
Completely
right. Split, my dad would roll up to my baseball games whenever he could. My dad would go to the beach with us. My dad would take me to the bowling alley. Like, we would do things together. And he was involved.
Sure.
You know, up until I pushed him out. So, right. You know, so I, this conversation makes me think of something I feel like it ties in. Y'all have to, we'll have to determine this and we'll have to leave it at this too. So, so yesterday, Casey was picking up the high schoolers at school, driving home, her, Brooke, our 15-year-old, and then, another 15-year-old, two boys that ride home, other pastors' kids, and so on. So they're coming down Lee Boulevard, and motorcycle flies by them. And there's a bus coming across Lee Boulevard. Motorcycle can't stop because he's going at least 70, 80 miles an hour. Mashes into the back of the bus. Casey's this is happening right in front of Casey, right in front of Brooke. And the bike goes flying another block down the road, and they just watch this man die. So Casey pulls off, calls 911 immediately. Like, Brooke is like, is he dead? Like, what am I looking at right now? I have no idea. And so she gets out, Casey gets out of the car. She gets out of the car. There's a woman that was a nurse. She saw kind of what happened, saw this man laying on the road, comes over, you know, starts doing the nurse things that you do, checking for vitals, CPR, all those kind of things. Another man stops that was right behind Casey. Like, he has a tarp in his truck. Casey's holding one end of the tarp. He's holding the other end of the tarp. Nurse is working behind there to see what's happening. This is a school bus, so there's kids on the bus. Bus driver getting off, seeing what's happening. And But Casey was the primary witness to all of this. And so she had to wait for the police. And then after that, because he was dead, they had to bring in a special, I don't know, whatever they're called, special person to that, special investigator that looks into those kind of things and share this, what she saw and what the experience was and everything that happened. And she came home last night. She was just wrecked.
Yeah.
Like, and so is Brooke. I mean,
I'm sure
just wrecked. And so here's a 19-year-old man. They never met. They had no interactions with prior to. He was obviously acting a fool, like, as it was anyway. Like, and witnessing that, didn't matter his ethnicity, didn't matter his background, didn't matter what he'd done. He could have been a drug dealer. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know the story. But for them, what they saw was just another human being. Mm-hmm. And their life ended at 19 years old.
Right.
And it destroyed them. And the compassion that they had for that individual and then their family and the friends and, well, Casey, and
like,
oh, go ahead.
Not even that, because, I mean, with her holding up the tarp, other kids didn't have to see that.
Right. Right.
That were driving by.
And that's what, and the whole time Casey was like, did I do the right thing because Brooke witnessed it and because, you know, Range was in the car and because Aiden was in the car and, like, I had to do something, but did I do the right thing for their sake? And I was like, yeah, you absolutely did. Mm-hmm. Like, you showed them so much. You showed them so much compassion in the way that you responded in that moment. And you showed them there's consequences for acting like an idiot too. Like, but beyond that, you showed them the compassion that it didn't matter what he was just doing. It didn't matter how foolish he was acting. It didn't matter. That was still a life, and you were going to show it respect, show respect to that person and the family that they represent and the friends that they have and all those things. And I mean, Casey didn't sleep for the better part of last night. And this morning, like, she's like, yeah, didn't really sleep. Didn't really have a good night. She's like, I just keep seeing him. Every time my eyes close, I see him laying there, and I can't stop seeing him. And to me, what that speaks of is that compassion that we have ingrained in all of us. And I get it. Some people become numb to that based on what they grow up with and what they see and what they experience and PTSD and all those kind of things. But ingrained in all of us is a compassion for other people, for people. And it doesn't matter their background. Makes you think about 9/11 that we just mourned, recognized.
Remembered.
There you go. Where almost 3,000 people that died in the midst of that, and they were from every different walk of life. And you come to this place where the politics don't matter anymore, and you stop listening to the voices of division, and you stop listening to all of these factions that are being formed in the world, right, which speak to who the enemy is, and you just see people. And that's the place we need to get to, is where we just see people. We just see sinners in need of a Savior. We just see sons and brothers and dads and moms and sisters and daughters. We just see people. We stop seeing all the stuff that the world is heaping on them and telling them they're no good, they're dirty, rotten, they've got no place, they've got no worth, they've got no value. And this 19-year-old kid had meant so much to Casey, kid that he never met, or that she'd never met, that, I mean, she lost sleep over this. And, I mean, Brooke had a hard time talking about it yesterday when she witnessed it, but it's a life. And that life has value attached to it. And that's the place we need to get to. Like, we can have all the debates and the conversation about being above reproach and about protecting and about division and about the enemy and about all those things. But what we have to collectively do as the body of Christ specifically is take a step back and see the people. Because that's what Jesus died for. Mm-hmm. He didn't die for your politics. He didn't die for your ethnicity. He didn't die for those things. He died for people. And he died for sinners, right? He died for us while we were his enemy. And that's what we need to hold on to. Because we never know when our last day is going to happen, right? Just like that 19-year-old didn't wake up yesterday or leave work yesterday afternoon and say, I'm going to die on my way home today. He made some decisions that weren't wise, but he didn't walk away saying that. So we never know collectively when our last day is, when our last breath is going to happen. And so we've got to do our very best to love others and to love God. And that's the core of what you find in the gospel. So, man, we've kind of ran through a whole gamut of things today. But my word to you is just that, you know, stop seeing the labels of everybody. Stop seeing the politics. Stop seeing the red and the blue and the black and the white. Stop seeing the ethnic gaps that we might have, or the language barriers. They call it the barriers. And start seeing the people that God created, breathed the breath of life into, and ultimately died for. And, man, that's what's going to make the world a better place, is when we stop seeing the things and the labels and we just start seeing the people. And so, hey, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you grew up in a different way than us collectively around this table. Maybe you've had a different experience than we have. You know, we're here to learn from those things. Like, we don't want to argue it. We want to debate it. Maybe we do want to debate it. But most importantly, we just want to learn from you and discuss. And so we would love to hear from you. You can hit us up on through email, thetruthresponse@gmail.com. Check us out on the social medias, and we will talk to you next week. God bless you guys. Hey, thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and give us a like on iTunes and Spotify so that you will never miss a show. And while you're at it, check out our Facebook and Instagram pages, and make sure you tell your friends about this show. You don't want them to miss out on the truth, because we are all about the truth here. Thanks for joining us this week, and God bless.